How about if I just start at the beginning? you can be honest.
Because you know what? They have the sweat equity that went into that memory that they're making with their friends and family. And that's what's important with us, and that's what the I Am Real World is about.
Well, that's a great question. You know, one of the best things about a spring food plot is you get a second chance if it fails.
Chasing Giants with Don Higgins. Brought to you by buyafarm.com, your source for farm, recreational properties, rural homes, and more. By tapping into Don's years of experience, dedication, and commitment, Chasing Giants focuses on the techniques, strategies, and dedication needed to harvest one of God's most amazing creations, world-class whitetails. Now, here is Don and co-host Terry Peer.
Well, good evening, everyone. It is episode 83 of Chasing Giants with Don Higgins, brought to you by buyafarm.com. Don, we are next to, like, what is it, 2 weeks away from the opener in Illinois. We're right there, and anticipation is getting high for all of the outdoorsmen out there.
Yeah, it's a little bit less than 2 weeks, actually, so we're only going to record one more podcast, and then I'll be hunting. And your season's already open, so have you got out yet? I know you took the winner of the Lester's Feet Raffle. How'd that go?
Yeah, so we recorded the last episode of Chasing Giants midweek with Dr. Strickland. So by the time we recorded last week's episode, I did not have my guest for the Lester's Feet Raffle. And we talked about opening weekend here in Kentucky. Usually I'm hitting it really hard, going after one of those bachelor groups in the alfalfa or the bean field. And I knew he was coming in that Friday to hunt. So I stayed out. So the first time we went hunting was a week ago Friday. He arrived early enough. He brought his lovely family in with him and picked him up, checked him, or got him to the hotel, picked him up. And unfortunately, we had a wind that was south, and it even fluttered a little bit south-southeast, so we couldn't hunt the bean field the first night. So we hunted the clover field, saw two deer. The second night, we had a south-southeast wind, south-southwest wind. And normally I got to have a pretty good, something pretty hard from the west. But since, you know, we talked about this, since he was coming in from out of town in only 2 days, and I don't have a giant on the property, but I have several mature bucks that I can document at least 5.5. I know one of them's at least 6.5. I was going to push the limits as much as I could to get him best chance. And Saturday night, we saw a good one, and he just stayed out at, I don't know, 190 yards, but we sat there and watched him for about 20 minutes, and then the last evening of our hunt, I'll give my buddy credit. Last night of a hunt, when he knows that he's probably not going to ever get to come back, he had small bucks right underneath of him, and he didn't shoot. And I had told him, I said, you can shoot a spike or a doe. I don't care. You know, it's your hunt. You can shoot whatever you wanted. And he was there after a bigger buck. So I give him credit. He stuck to his goals even on the last night of the hunt. So because of that, I told him that if we can get him back down here in late season, if I have a decent buck, then I'll get him back down here and see if he can crack one with a muzzleloader or something in late season.
Well, good deal. Sounds like you had a good time anyway.
Yep. We talk about a lot on this podcast, the right wind. And, you know, it was really frustrating. So it's kind of hard for people to understand it. But the blind, we were in an elevated box blind. It was on the south side of the food plot in a wood peninsula that comes up to the center of it. The bedding is across the north side on the other side of the food plot. So that's why I have to have that wind, you know, coming from the west to get it out into the big field. Anything from that south blows that up into that bedding area. And I was based on the trail camera pictures that I had, I was really shocked that we didn't see more deer. But I watched the trail camera on the night after he left. Actually, the three nights after he left, we had those bachelor groups back in that field right at last light. And the only explanation I have is that wind was fluttering to that south-southwest wind enough that if those bucks were bedded anywhere north and got a little bit of a swirl, they probably smelled us and they stayed where they were at. Because they're there the couple nights before, they were there the couple nights after. You know, we pushed the limit with the wind. So if people don't believe you that, you know, the gimmicks of scent technology are going to keep a deer from winding you, I've been chatting with him since he went back. I'm convinced that the reason we didn't see that bachelor group come out in the middle of that field is because the wind was just a little bit too far out of the south.
Well, there's a lot of deer hunters don't understand just how critical the wind is. A mature buck relies on the wind just like we rely on our eyes to the same degree. And I don't know how many times, you know, we wouldn't think about closing our eyes and walking about the day doing our business. We wouldn't get out of our bedroom before we'd fall on our face or run into something. And a mature buck is just rarely going to give up the wind. I mean, very, very rarely, almost never. Yeah. And even when people think that the wind is wrong for the buck and why is he moving with the wind at his tail or whatever, there's usually an explanation. We just may not know it.
Yeah, so the buck that we saw, he's a 13-pointer. He's a mature buck, just an absolute tank of a body. He's not a huge scoring buck, but got some forked brow tines, a kicker. I got some small little points off each side. Not a huge frame, but just, I mean, he's a tank, Don. The second night of the hunt, we're sitting there watching the field, and literally there he is standing in the brush. And it almost makes me think the situation I just explained. So the bedding is to the north of us on the other side of the food plot. Imagine him to my northwest. So I'm pretty sure that he was bedded right there, right next to the food plot. And literally he just stood up and took, you know, a couple steps over into it. We didn't see him walk up the hill, you know, in the gaps in the brush and stuff. My guess is he was bedded right there the whole time. We slipped in there, but that wind, you know, since he was so far to our northwest at the other end of the food plot, you know, he wasn't close to the wind. But my guess is that bachelor group probably used that wind to check that area before they came out. So we tried the best we could, had just an absolute awesome time. The Kaufman family, just super great people. They got to visit the Ark while they were in town. They did that on Saturday and said they had a really good time there. So I hope that they listen to the podcast, and I hope they know that we will stay in touch with them, and hopefully I'll get to see them when I'm back in Illinois later this year. So it was a great trip. Like I said,
yeah, they don't live too far from me. So if you're up this way, there's a good chance you can stop in and see them.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, some of their family actually knows you really well. So, like I said, yep. I know they're listening. Think the world of them. Melissa she brought me a big old thing of cookies. They were gone in like, I don't know, a day. They were so good. So, I told him I'd bring them back just for the cookies. They don't have to worry about hunting deer. So, but anyway, that's the only time I've been able to hunt. Had an east wind this weekend, and I do not have one stand location anywhere around me that I can hunt with an east wind. So, I was grounded for the weekend. So, temperatures are dropping and wind is shifting after this rain coming through here in the next couple of days. I'm excited about this weekend or this upcoming week.
Well, hunt smarter, not harder, and it sounds like that's what you're doing. So
yep.
Wait for the time to be right and go in and get it done, or you can go in when the conditions are wrong and you can ruin your hunt for the rest of the season.
I will tell our listeners that I did get on a buck. He is not on me. It's permission farm. No food plots. It's going to be his real world. Is, you know, got permission to hunt him after I found him, but need a northwest wind to hunt him. So that's what I'm looking for. He's a good one. Great Kentucky deer, mature. So I'll keep you guys posted on that as we go, but I do now have a target buck that I can go after.
Well, I wish I could say that.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about, last time we talked, you were in the process of moving trail cameras, and as many as you run, the last time we talked, on Labor Day, because we've had a Ron Slifer episode, we've had a Dr. Strickland episode. Let's talk a little bit about moving these cameras. What's the status of that? And maybe what do you have on camera so far?
Well, I've got them all moved now to, where I want them, or at least for the time being. I'll probably shift a few more as throughout the season. But, you know, there was three or four episodes ago, I made mention that I have cameras on 33 properties in 3 states. And, I got a text this week from, a friend of ours. He's a consulting client and been to the master course, Ray Miller out of Ohio. And Ray wanted to know, he says, you've been running these cameras on 33 properties all summer long. How many bucks over 150 inches have you got pictures of? And how many over 170? Because he's asking me if I had a big shooter yet, anything over 180. And I told him, no, I don't. And so he wanted to know how many bucks over 150 and how many over 170. So yesterday it was hot as could be here in Illinois yesterday afternoon. So I got on the computer and I started going through my files of the photos that I've saved this year and counted up how many bucks over 150 and how many over 170. And this is probably going to shock some people, but I've actually got...
You broke up
50 inches on 33 properties.
All right, you broke up on us for a second, so we need to step back. We lost you at how many bucks do you have over... You said it's going to shock people. You have how many bucks over 150?
32.
32 bucks 32 over 150 bucks. Inches. Goodness gracious.
Yep. But I'm covering some area now. You got to keep that in mind.
Yeah, and this ain't all on the home farm either.
Nope. It's in 3 states, actually. So of those 32 bucks, only 5 of those are over 170.
Okay.
And none of them are over mid-170s. In fact, the 5 that I think will top 170, I think every one of them is in the low 170, say like from about 170 to 174. 175, somewhere in there.
Okay.
None of them are even going to nudge 180. Yeah. And
are all of those ones? Five, I'm sorry.
I was going to say, of those 5 over 170, all 4 of the 5, I believe, are 4-year-olds.
Okay.
Which I absolutely am not going to shoot a 4-year-old. I'm going to let those live. Those are going to be the giants when they get to be 6. So 4 of the 5. I will not shoot because I think they're only 4-year-olds. One is an older buck. He is at least 5, maybe 6. A clean 10 pointer. Just based on some of bucks I've shot in the past, I think this buck will go somewhere between, say, 172 to 174 as a clean 5x5. That buck I would shoot. Okay. So that is the only buck I would shoot.
He's number one on the hit list for Illinois then? I'm assuming he's in Illinois or is he in Iowa?
He is in Illinois. He is not on my farm.
Okay. So is that going to be now you've teed it up for me. I'm going to put you on the spot here. Now that you kind of have this inventory, I mean, what's your objective this year? We know kind of what you're wanting to do in Illinois. We know this kind of desire you have to go after public, but without a true Higgins, you know, level giant. A lot of these bucks you've just described are giants to most of us, but what's on the objective or goal list for this year now that you kind of know what you're dealing with?
Well, in regards to public land bucks, some of these 150 inch bucks are on public, but I'm not looking to shoot a 150 inch buck on public. I want to shoot one 170 plus on public.
Okay.
And I've got a buck that I've been watching, and he's 5 years old this year, and he's survived thus far. I don't know how, because I get his picture daylight on public. and have for three seasons. No, this will be the third season. But I'm going to let him go another year, and you know, next year he'll be sixth if nobody kills him, and he very well could get shot. So public, it's not looking good for me to shoot a giant on public this year. My goal, believe it or not, my goal for the entire season, Iowa, Illinois, the whole deal is I think if I can kill one buck over 170 inches, that's my goal. And to be honest, it's going to be tough. It's going to be tougher for me to kill a one buck over 170 this year than it was for me to kill a 220-inch buck last. Wow, because they're just not there. And if they're not there, you can't kill them.
Right. And it's amazing the similarities. And this is a true testament to everybody listening that we talk about Don Higgins' goals should not be necessarily what someone else listening's goals, or my goals shouldn't be what a friend of mine's goals are. You know, I'm sitting in the place where I really want to shoot a deer over 160 this year. And so far, I don't have one except for the one that just showed up 2 weeks ago. So, you know, I don't have a target buck in Illinois yet. Now, the properties that we have that I can hunt in Illinois don't hold a lot of bachelor groups, so I'm excited to see what shows up there as the rut kicks in, you know, because there was quite a few dandies on it last year. But it's eerie how we have some of the same similarities, that just that upper end structure of size, not necessarily age, but size wise, having a little bit trouble finding them this year.
Yeah, and you know, something really interesting is that not to be name dropping here, but I was talking to one of my contacts at Matthews this week. And they was asking me, you know, what I've got on the line for this year. And I said, I think it's a terrible year for big deer. And he said that he's talked to some of the biggest names in the industry that drop big deer on a regular basis. And they said the same thing on the farms they own and manage, that they just don't have, they got some good up and comers, which is what I'm seeing.
Right.
But they just don't have those top end bucks this year.
Yep.
And so I think that's pretty common, and it kind of falls right in line with the buck forecast we gave a few episodes back, that I think this is a down year overall for big bucks.
Well, Patrick and I had a conversation a couple hours ago. We went and moved a camera earlier this afternoon, and I made a statement to him that I guess I really didn't think all the way through until after I said it. I'll tell you again and let you pick it apart. You know, everybody goes into panic mode about their property in the bad years or when they don't have a target buck. And, you know, I've managed the same property year after year after year after year, not as long as you have with your home farm. But as I look at my farm this year and the bachelor groups that were on it all summer, and maybe this doesn't make sense. You'll have to tell me if it doesn't. I'm not concerned with the age structure on my farm. I just don't have the bigger size antlers this year. I know that I have bucks on my farm in the bachelor group this summer that were older than 5.5 years old. It's just usually one of those bucks is up over 150, 155, which is a huge buck for Kentucky. So I have that age structure here this year. It's just the antler size isn't here, if that makes sense, and I don't know if that makes sense or not.
Oh, it makes perfect sense. You know, I've got a buck that has been on this farm. He'd be 8.5 years old this year. He's alive. I just got his picture this week. He's alive. The last, I don't know how many years, he's been over 170. He's been like low 170s, like from 170 to say mid 170s.
Yeah, I hunted him for a year.
Exactly. Well, that buck this year went backwards. He's going to be about a 160. So,
yeah.
That was a buck that I was kind of counting on to top that 170-inch mark this year, and he didn't do it.
So that leads me to a question. I kind of did that as a preface for the question that I'm about to ask. If we're a land manager and we're seeing these anomalies, we always, you know, we have to expect that we're going to have good years and bad years. As we're making changes, should we worry about years like this as long as we see the age structure not changing, or do you know, because the alternative is if we go and do something different, or the neighbors buy the next property, or some type of change happens to the landscape, and we lose our age structure, meaning all we see is 2 and 3 year olds. Obviously, we're going to panic if that's the case. But do we still stay the course in a situation like I have in Kentucky this year, where we still have the age structure, just not the antler size?
Well, I mean, each person has to make that decision for themselves. But for me, it's an easy decision, because if I don't kill a deer this year, it's not the end of the world. I've killed more than my share. But, you know, going back to Ray Miller again, him and I text back and forth pretty regular. And I think he said here a week or so ago that he says, you know, what really separates you from most land managers is that most people will not, they won't let the biggest buck on their place live. If they get a chance to shoot the biggest antler deer that they know is on their place in a particular fall, they're going to do it every single time. And you will only do it when he's old enough.
Yeah.
So, you know, I got several younger bucks, you know, say from 4 to 3 and 4 year olds that are really nice on my place this year. And I know they're not all going to make it, but they definitely won't make it if I shoot them. So, you know, things are looking up a couple years down the line, but when you take it to the ultimate level, you're not going to have a 200 incher there every year. You're not going to have a 180 there every year.
Yeah.
There's going to be years where the biggest buck on your place is, depending on where you're at too. But here in the Midwest, you know, 150 inch deer are pretty common. You know, I know I mentioned that I've had cameras on 32 or 33 different properties this summer, and I got 32 bucks over 150. So that's about one buck per property. Now, there are properties I did not get a single buck over 150, and then there's some where I got two or three.
Right.
But it averages out to about a 150 inch buck per property. And I think that's fairly common through at least the better parts of the Midwest. And then you get in areas, you know, where the whole county is really being managed, such as Decatur County, Iowa, or Van Buren County, Iowa. And those numbers are going to be a little higher, but you got to stay the course. And if you can't go a season without shooting a deer, it's going to be tough. I guess you could always shoot some cull bucks, but how many people are going to sit there and let a 160-inch 3-year-old walk and then shoot a 130-inch 5-year-old? There's not many people that are going to let the 160 walk to shoot a 130.
Well, those are great points, and it's my poor interview or question asking skills that, you know, you answered it from a standpoint of what bucks I'm going to shoot or pass. Mm-hmm. Spin that same question in a way of what we're doing for habitat projects. You know, you put a plan together, you're always trying to improve it. But I think there's another side of this, that somebody gets in a situation like mine and they think that their plan's not working because they don't have a buck big enough on their property. So now they're going to change how they're doing everything. You've made it very clear over the years that you're constantly making it better, but I want you to talk just a little bit about it, because I think people look at the short-term result versus the long-term, you know, plan, and try to deviate and change too much. And it's like you said, sometimes people do more harm to properties than others. So that's where I'm really wanting to go with this question, isn't necessarily what bucks we try to shoot, but in a year where we don't have a lot of big bucks, I think, maybe I'm wrong, but people maybe overcomplicate it and end up doing more damage trying to change things on their plan for the property and habitat.
Yeah. I mean, I can tell you without a doubt that you got to stick with the plan. And when it comes to my consulting clients, I see that, because the ones that follow the plan the closest and stick to it the longest are the most satisfied clients that I've got. The ones that deviate from the plan, they don't buy into it from the beginning, whatever. They've got their doubts that this is going to work. They try to throw their own ideas or somebody else's idea into the plan and mix
right.
it up.
Right.
It just doesn't work as well, but you got to have a in it, you got to stick with it. And, you know, I tell all my clients, you got to look 5 years in advance. When I give you the plan and you start enacting that plan, implementing the changes to your property, you need to be looking 5 years in advance. Forget what happens the next 2 or 3 years. You may make the biggest buck of your life, but you're trying to continually get that property better and better. And even at that, it's not, if you was to chart this, you know, on a graph, it's not a steady climb. It's not like the line is just continually pointing up. It's going to be a jagged line, and hopefully it's in an upward trend, but there's going to be peak years, and there's going to be years where the biggest buck on your place is not as big as it was the year before. And you just got to continue forward with the plan.
Maybe it would be a cool project to make a deeper dive into a future podcast. You know, I put your home farm, I would put it up against any spot in the country, especially small acre properties, you know, not like a, you know, 1,000-acre managed property, but, you know, you have one of the best whitetail properties in the country, and you don't have the giant every year. Look at the year after you shot Smokey. Look at the year after you shot Mel. You know, you're even dealing with the cycles that I'm dealing with in Kentucky, even on your home farm, and it's 150 times better than my farm. So I guess the message to people that I wanted to mine out from you is, even in years, if you're seeing situations like Don and I have this year, don't panic, don't go crazy, stay the course. As we shift gears here a little bit, I want to talk a little bit about last week's episode, the response that we got for having Dr. Strickland on our podcast was absolute crazy. Not only just the number of downloads, but I got a bunch of messages of people who said that they went out and started following Dr. Strickland's podcast from the Deer Lab and said that they were really enjoying that.
Yeah, and I've got a lot of interest in the Whitetail Masters course, especially the two where he's going to attend and participate with a lecture of his own. Those are going to sell out, and they're going to sell out quick. I've already got some deposit checks for those. And in fact, I'll just throw this out there right now, and I'm going to do it again at the end, but I want to tell people how, if they want to sign up, I require a $500 deposit per person. And the reason for that is I want to make sure that we limit the number of students that can come. And I want to make sure of the day of the course, you know, it's not a 70 degree spring day and nobody shows up.
Right.
So if you're interested, the dates of these courses is March 10th and 12th. We'll have Bronson Strickland will be here those two dates as part of those courses. And those courses are $2,000 each per student. And then we've got four more on March 17th, 19th, 24th, and 26th. Will be the regular master course. That's $1,500 per person. If you're interested, send a $500 deposit per student that's going to be there, be attending, to Higgins Outdoors. The address is 1459 North 3500 East Road in Gays, Illinois, G-A-Y-S. Zip code 61928. I've got a lot of Amish people that were calling this week because they don't get on the website. They can't see it on the website, and they want to know what to do. We'll go over that again at the end of this podcast, so you got time to grab a pen. But those courses are not going to – they're going to fill up quick.
Yeah, for those people who don't know, the master course, you come in the night before and literally you hang out with Don and myself and a very few number. I mean, it's not uncommon for us to sit around in a big circle around the shed and just talk about deer hunting for 3 and 4 hours the night before the seminar the next day. And then obviously those two other classes with Dr. Strickland, he'll be there doing the exact same thing, making himself available. So not only is it just going and watching presentations, walking farms, interaction, but there's a lot of sit down, you know, in a very small group, and the dialogue that goes into the people that are there, everybody's very serious hunters. It's a lot of fun for everybody. So, and just so people, I want to make sure people understand this, your spot is not reserved until your deposit is in, right?
That's exactly right. Okay. Ran into issues with that before. So,
all right. So we'll circle back around. We'll circle back around. If you're listening on MTech, or you need to make a note about where to get more information, or send that to, we'll mention that later in the podcast. So if you miss that, just be ready as we get down into it. So before we go to the BioFarm segment, do you have a best and worst for the week?
Oh, I got a best and worst.
All right.
I think the best, a lot of people probably have seen this on social media this week. The best thing that I seen was you, Terry.
Oh, no.
You got the shotgun out, and you blew apart a trail camera. And
I was really hoping we could get through this episode without that coming up.
I seen that, and I started laughing. I was laughing out loud. Robin says, "What are you laughing about? What's so funny over there?" And I said, "You got to see this." But well, it was funny, and somebody even suggested that I use it as my best of the week, and I was already planning on that before they commented, but well, that was pretty funny.
Can I at least explain it just a minute?
Yeah, you need to.
All right, so I did this trail camera trail camera test last year, and it started out where this one camera just bothered me because it never hardly ever worked. I could, you know, I tested all these cameras in different setups. If I could get it to actually work, it hardly ever took a picture. Well, at the end of the test, I sold all of those cameras to listeners or followers of social media or the podcast and donated the money to, back then it wasn't even called Lester's Feet, but we donated the money to basically charity from all the cameras that was used in the test. And this thing was so bad, I refused to sell it because I didn't want somebody to have it. And we said we were going to shoot it at 500 yards with my custom muzzle loader that I have built and watch it explode. And I kind of said, no, I'm not out here to embarrass a company or, you know, I didn't want to get gain of views or likes or shares or everything and basically bash somebody. So what ended up happening is I found this buck that I talked about earlier on the podcast, right? Well, all my cell cameras are either in Illinois or they were on the back of my farm here in Kentucky. And my buddy Matthew, the winner of the Lester's Feet raffle, was on his way in a couple days later to hunt. And I didn't want to put any intrusion on my farm to go pull a cell camera to put on another piece of property where I found this deer at. And I'm sitting here in my office downstairs and I see the box of this Spy Point camera from last year. And I thought, that's my only choice if I want to use a cell camera. So I got this thing out, went through everything. And I'm not a real techie guy, but I followed every instruction online with firmware, the right SD card, charging the battery. I got it communicating with my phone once, but it still would never send pictures. Tried customer service, is garbage, is much garbage. And I had a really hard week, and I came home one day and saw zero pictures on it. And I had just purchased a tactical 12-gauge shotgun that I hadn't shot yet, so I walked in the door and had just one of those days that I was really mad at a cell camera. And I said, "Jonathan, come here. We're going to go blow up a trail camera." So tell you what, that gun kicks though. I just had light bird shot in the magazine.
Yeah.
I ran 9 rounds through that trail camera pretty good. It busted up into like 4 pieces, but yeah, it was a lot of fun. So it got the brunt. Well, it got the brunt of my frustration that day.
You know, the crazy thing is that a lot of people commented that they had tried that brand of camera and it was junk. I mean, everybody agreed it was junk. I don't think anybody stood up for that brand. And it just bewildered me how somebody would you know, how they get people to be on their pro staff or promote them or whatever. And I'm not just talking about this particular company, but there's a handful of products that we all know is junk, and yet there's people trying to promote them. And
I shouldn't say this on air, but I don't really care at this point. I blew up somebody's cell camera on social media. Somebody commented about it, about buying one, and I said, let's do this. You just go ahead, if you're considering buying one of these cameras, you go ahead and just send me $100. I'll drive to your house, knock on the door, you open it up, and I'll kick you in the nuts and turn around and walk away, and you'll be better off. That situation would be better off than if you would buy one of these cameras. You'll still be ahead.
Well, I think you broke me of even thinking about buying one.
All right, so what's the worst for the week?
Well, the worst, and this is probably going to shock no one that spends any time on social media. So I've seen two different giant bucks that have already been killed this season.
Yeah.
One in Kentucky, one in Kansas, and there's controversies around both of them. So I think everybody knows exactly what I'm talking about. The Kentucky buck, if I understand it right, and I'm not going to use any names because I don't know what really went on. You know, I wasn't there.
Right.
But supposedly this big giant buck was shot by someone in Kentucky, and then this high fence outfit out of Indiana steps forward and says, wait a minute, that buck was shot on our place on September the 9th, I believe it was, and that is not a free-range wild Kentucky deer. And I don't know the ins and outs. You probably know the story better than I do, Terry.
Well, the implied thing based on what came out, the two situations I think are very different. In this case, I think the hunter claimed it was wild, and then the high fence place said, no, that was shot actually on our property. So the way I understand it, that's how it went down for the Kentucky deer.
Okay. Well, the Kansas deer, and I'm going to throw out something really interesting to people, and I'm not going to elaborate too much, but I had 25 years experience with captive deer, and there's certain antler traits that are pretty darn common in captive deer that are pretty darn rare in wild deer.
Right.
And as soon as I seen that Kansas buck, as soon as I seen it, before I ever heard the first word of controversy, I thought to myself, that's a captive deer.
Yes.
And I'm not even going to say what those antler traits are, because I don't want the biggest problem I have with the whole captive industry is the dishonesty that these guys that shoot these deer, they try to pass them off so often as wild deer. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not going to get in the middle of should captive deer be outlawed or anything like that. You know, it really doesn't matter what I think. If someone is fine with shooting a deer in a pen, that's their issue. My issue is dishonesty. If you shot him in a pen, be honest about it. Hey, I shot this in a preserve.
Right.
It's when you start lying and you're dishonest and you try to pass it off as something that it isn't, that's when I start having an issue. And I think the young man that shot this deer, he was, I think, totally upfront and honest. He was getting this deer's picture.
Right.
And for a week or two ahead of season, then he ended up shooting a deer. And supposedly it's an escapee out of a captive herd, I heard 10 miles away. Who knows what the truth is.
Yeah. And what we're saying about what we understand the story to be, it might be different. So please don't blow up on us. There's 30 different sides and opinions, and you know, we just know what we hear. In this case, the kid, I think pretty fairly young guy, found the deer, got trail camera pictures of the deer. The trail camera pictures, unless they're photoshopped really, really well, didn't have an ear tag in it. He was able to harvest the deer, and then afterwards, the preserve or the deer farm basically said, "Hey, yeah, that one's ours. He got out." So, mm-hmm. So I'm the whole mess behind the thing. I think you're absolutely right. It's we're not here to say somebody's right or wrong by, you know, how they're deciding whether to go hunt fences or not. But in the case of, let's say you're running cameras on a property, and without going into the characteristics, if a buck like that, well, you start getting a picture of, you know, a lot of the dialogue on social media said, oh, every single hunter would have shot that deer or hunted that deer.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know what Don Higgins would have done if
would not have shot that deer.
If you started getting pictures of that, what is the first thing that you do?
I'm looking for the nearest, you know, high fence place, because I know that's a captive deer.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking down or speaking down on this young man that shot it or anybody else that would shoot it. I'm just saying, if that deer showed up on my place, I know it came from a pen. And that deer, for me to shoot it, means nothing to me.
Right.
And all these, here's the thing that really kind of irritates me too, is you get on social media and the high fence places just get bashed right and left. But yet these same people that are bashing the high fence places are saying they would have shot that deer. Mm-hmm. So it's okay to shoot him if he gets out, but he's not okay if he's still in the pen. Yep. It's the same deer.
Yep. So, so I want to break that down just a little bit. And it's okay to say what you would do, because all of us that are listening to this podcast right now know that you're at such a different level anyway. I mean, who passes a 216 male to shoot him when he's 220? I mean, that's why I think it's so fascinating to hear what you would have done. And the average hunter, if they see that deer, they're going after it just like this kid did. Mm-hmm. There's people that might see it during the rut chasing and never really understand what he is. Just they see big, they see mass, they see points, and you know they lay a rifle shot or a shotgun shot to him and kill him. But yeah, I mean, knowing what you know about the captive side of it and seeing it, being able to say something's not right here. So saying that, one of the other big controversies on this is, and I don't know that I've read what Kansas official statement is, whether this is considered fishing game or this is livestock. A lot of people were wondering, is this going to be scored as a record book buck?
No, I think I seen something where Boone and Crockett, I believe it was, made a statement that this is a, they even congratulated the young man that shot it and said, but it will not be entered in their record books.
Yeah.
One thing I want to stress is that, you know, I said I would not shoot that deer, and I guarantee you there's a lot of listeners that don't believe that, but that's the absolute truth. But I'm not looking to force my opinion on this issue. I did not even comment on this issue on social media. And if somebody else decided they would shoot it, that's their business. I'm not looking down on anybody. So don't think that it's Don's way or the highway. If you're in that situation, you decide to shoot it, that's your business, not my business.
Yeah.
But I promise you, I would not have shot it, because I would have been, the first thing I would have been doing was looking for where it came from.
And I guess if I'm honest with it, if I would have gotten a trail camera picture of it, I would have questioned it. The pictures that he had of it, I would have said something's not right here. If the first time I saw it was when I was hunting in the heat of the moment, didn't, you know, basically this thing appears and starts coming through, I'm probably putting a hole in it. Just because, I don't know. I can see where the first time you see it, he comes running through chasing a doe or whatever. But, yeah, if I got a picture of it, I would question what was going on. That's stuff that's too good to be true is usually too good to be true. So, but, yeah. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Terry.
I don't know. I think the two situations with Kentucky and Kansas are complete opposite spectrums of situations. It sounds like the Kentucky thing was malicious. I think this kid was stand up and honest the entire time. You know, he even admitted there was a hole in the ear. So I don't discredit, I don't blame this kid in Kansas one bit. If these people in Kentucky shot this deer in a fence and then brought it into the actually took it across state lines and then tried to pass it off as a Kentucky buck. Yeah, I hope they get the hammer dropped.
I agree with that totally. And, you know, it just comes down to honesty. You know, I think the young man that shot the Kansas deer was being totally honest, shared the trail camera pictures, told his story exactly how it happened, and the Kentucky situation was just the opposite, like you said. So it is what it is, and it's not my place to be the judge of either one of these guys. So I guess in the end, everybody gets what they got coming.
And they're both going to have haters no matter what. I had people yelling at me because I blew up a camera. So
anyway. I'm going to have a hater because I said that I wouldn't shoot it. And there's going to be somebody that don't believe that, and they're going to post it and call me a liar. Yeah. Or just wait.
It was the same people that said that, you know, you wouldn't pass a 216. So be it. All right. Well, with that, you okay with moving on to the BioFarm segment?
Yep, I'm ready.
BioFarm.com is your source for farm, recreational properties, rural homes, and more. Now, here is Don Higgins with this week's featured property.
All right, this week's featured property is 130 acres. It's all wooded. It's in Clinton County, Illinois, right along the Washington County line. So just barely into Clinton County near the Washington County property, or the Washington County line. It's basically all wooded. There's a creek that goes through it, Creek to be exact, mainly upland woods. There's a large ag area nearby, which kind of makes this property a sanctuary for deer and turkeys both. It's pretty secluded. I mean, to get to it, you got to go to the end of a dead-end road. It basically turns to a dirt or gravel lane, and you got to go down that for a little distance to get to the property. But it looked to me from the pictures that I was seeing on the BioFarm website, it looks like there's some mature timber on that, so I don't know if there's any timber buyers that might be interested. The price looks pretty good too, but if you're interested, you want to call agent Wayne Keller, and Wayne's phone number is 618-407-1679, and I'm sure he'd be glad to show you the property.
All right. Well, and once again, we thank BioFarm for their continued support of the podcast. You know, the thing about this podcast is, you know, we've made it very clear we're not doing this to make money, you know, to get rich by any means. If that was the case, we would structure it a whole lot differently. But at the end of the day, the people like BioFarm and Victory Chevrolet and all of our other sponsors, they're the ones that's really stepped up and allowed us to do this and not be a paid subscription or anything by the listeners. So the information that you're getting from us, there is a cost for us to publish this stuff and us to buy this equipment and software and everything. So we do really appreciate BioFarm and our other sponsors for making that happen. So when you do have an opportunity where you're looking for a piece of property, you're looking for a new Chevrolet or GMC truck, it means a lot to us to reach out to these people and give them a call and tell them that we sent you. So the other thing that you can obviously do for those of you listening on YouTube is leave a comment, share, subscribe. And those of you listening in podcast app land, make sure you go into your app and leave us a review or a comment. That really helps other people looking for this type of content to find us. So with that, let's move on to our listener submitted questions segment. Now, for those of you new to the podcast, if you submit a question on Chasing Giants or HigginsOutdoors.com, both of those two websites will lead you to the same place. If you submit a question on there and we use it on air, Don will send you a Chasing Giants t-shirt. So with that, we should have a couple good ones for tonight, Don.
We do, and I just want to throw something else out, Terry. When you submit your question, there's a form that you fill out with your address, and that address is so that we can send you the t-shirt. We're not going to send you any junk mail. If we don't use your question, you'll never get anything from us. But if we do use your question, we need to know where to send that t-shirt. And I've had a couple instances where people didn't get their t-shirts, and I'll look back and I'll say, well, do you live at no, and well, why did you submit that? Why didn't they want a bunch of junk mail? We're not sending you junk mail. Just when you fill that form out, use your correct address where you want your t-shirt to be shipped. Otherwise, we don't know where to send it. So with that said, I'm going to move on to the first question, which is from Alex Dunker from New London, Missouri.
All right.
Alex says, how do you determine when you've maximized the potential on a parcel of land? My family has two 60-acre farms in Pike County, Illinois. One of the farms we have had for 30 years, and we have tried everything through the years, warm season grasses, food, more food, water holes, sanctuaries, etc. We more or less went back to a couple of small brassica plots and let it go and have fun with it because it was never any better with extensive effort. One year we had 4 acres of fenced off 50 bushel beans, 4 acres of brassica and 2 acres of clover, a 10 acre refuge and 30 acres of CRP. We had tons of does, only found one shed antler and shot one older 130 inch buck. Big old bucks just do not seem to want to stay there. Alex's question is two parts, and that was the first part. I want to answer that first.
Okay.
So Alex, your property is in your two farms, are in Pike County, Illinois. Now I'm going to be very brutally honest here, and I'm going to step on some toes big time, and people are not going to like what I'm about to say, but I'm going to tell you something. I've worked all over the Midwest in some of the best places there is. I've been to Decatur County, Iowa multiple times. I've been to Van Buren County, Iowa multiple times on multiple properties, Buffalo County, Wisconsin, Pike County, Illinois, all the big name places I've been there. I've been all over the state of Illinois. And I want to tell you something. Pike County, in my opinion, is the most overrated place on the entire planet for big deer. 20, 25 years ago, the place was fantastic. Today, it's living on its past reputation. People are landowners, especially non-resident landowners who bought into Pike County, are fleeing. They're selling their properties and they're going to other places because the place is just terrible today. And the reason for it is commercial hunting. A lot of it was tied up by outfitters who brought in countless non-resident hunters, their clients, and these guys came from the South. They came from the East Coast. And a two-year-old buck in Illinois is probably bigger than anything those guys ever seen in their life where they came from. And they got shot, and they got shot, and they got shot. Today, Pike County is a disaster. I've had multiple chances to hunt Pike County on multiple properties, open invitations, and I wouldn't drive across the state for free to hunt there. And the place is only about 2.5 hours from my house. And that is the whole issue here, Alex, is it doesn't matter what you do to your property. If those bucks aren't there, you're never going to attract them. And the fact of the matter is those bucks are not there. The best buck you said you shot that one year was 130 inch. Well, you know what? That was probably the best buck that was in the whole neighborhood. And if the bucks are not there, it does not matter what you do on your property. And it's just like, you know, earlier in the podcast, I was describing all these properties where I got all these cameras and I can't find a buck that's 180 inches. Well, you know what? My odds of killing 180 inch deer are zero. My only hope, I think, for a 180 inch buck is I get over there in Iowa, properties that I don't have past history on and don't know what shows up in the fall. Maybe one will show up there, but in Illinois, I can tell you the odds of me shooting a 180 inch buck in Illinois this year are just about zero. If I can shoot one over 170, as I explained earlier, I'll be darn happy. And that's your whole situation there. It's not anything you've done. It's just the bucks you're looking for are not there.
So does this go back to what we talked about earlier? I mean, it's a great question considering what dialogue we had at the beginning, and it was unintentional. He needs to be really looking at his age structure, not the score of his antler. If how do I word this so it doesn't sound stupid? You know, everybody keeps focusing on antler size, but if you don't have deer that's living past 4.5, you have a fundamental problem. You're never going to have the giants if you can't get bucks past 4.5.
And that's exactly the problem.
Yeah. So quit worrying, quit analyzing your antler score. We always look at the antler score to analyze the decisions we make. Start looking at age structure, right?
And then you're right, Terry. But the issue that I see here with Alex is that the two farms he's got are only 60 acres apiece. So when you got a 60 acre track, you're somewhat, you know, limited. Right. Well, you're not somewhat, you're very limited by what your neighbors do and what the state allows, basically.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, he's got a second part to the question.
He does. The second part, he says, I am in the land market now that we are planning to pay off our house soon. How do you know the places with true big buck potential? I don't want to spend $300,000 on a farm only to work all summer and see more 130-inch deer. Our existing farms are both in Pike County, Illinois, one of them on the west side and one up in the Golden Triangle area. I am extremely thankful for both places, but simply put, you're not going to see anything over 150 unless it is a happy accident during the rut. We pass two-year-old after two-year-old, and once they hit three, they're gone. We just cannot seem to grow and keep anything big. I'm a firm believer that habitat improvements can definitely help, but at the end of the day, there are farms where big bucks just want to be. How do you find those farms? Well, I think you've simplified it a little too much there, Alex. There's not just farms where big bucks want to be. It's farms where big bucks feel safe. And in Pike County, Illinois, those farms are very, very rare. It's become so commercialized that every property has got hunters on it. And those bucks just don't have those sanctuary type properties where they can be safe and make it through the season. My advice to you is you need to unload those Pike County properties immediately. I'm telling you, Pike County is a sinking ship. With each passing season, more and more people realize it, and the potential buyers, the list of potential buyers shrinks. If I owned property in Pike County, I would already sold it. But if I owned it today, I would have it on the market tomorrow. As far as finding a property, you know, the county it's in, people get wrapped up on the counties that properties are in. That can be important, but there is good properties in a lot of places, a lot of counties that people have never heard of. In fact, if I listed off what I consider, say, the top three or four counties in Illinois, I guarantee you most listeners, unless they were from this part of the state, probably would be shocked that I'm even listing those counties, and I'm not going to do that. But, you know, big bucks can be found just about anywhere. And I get all the time, you know, potential clients are saying, I'm going to buy a property, and as soon as I do, I'm going to hire you, but I'm wondering if you can help me, you know, find that property. If I send you, you know, real estate listings, will you tell me if that's a good property to buy? And I typically do that, you know, with the understanding of those people are going to hire me to come and put a plan together for their property once they got it bought. And I tell these people all the time, what is more important than what's on that property is it's way more important what surrounds that property. You can have the very best laid out property in North America, and if it's surrounded by killmongers on every side, you're never going to be able to get those bucks to the older age classes. But you can take a small 5 or 10 acre property, and if it lays up to a 1,000 acre sanctuary where no hunting's allowed, and you put food on your 5 acres, you can kill some giants. So just keep that in mind. What lays around your property is way more important than what's on the property, because you can influence what's on the property. Whatever's missing, you can put it there. You can create it.
Right.
But you can't do anything on what's surrounding it, and that's what's really important.
Fantastic. Great question.
Anything to add there, Terry?
No, I think you're right. Look at your checkerboard instead of the property. Look at what's around the square.
Yep, for sure.
All right, good question. Thanks for submitting it. You're going to get a T-shirt.
And the next question comes from Jerry Mullet from Crawford, Mississippi. Jerry says, hi, Don. I submitted this earlier for Bronson Strickland, but since he didn't answer it, maybe you can. Most states that produce high-scoring mature deer have a 1 or 2 buck quota and a short gun season after the rut. My home state of Mississippi has a 3 buck quota and a long rifle season during the rut. When I talked with a state biologist in Jackson, Mississippi, he said we have too many deer and wanted to kill more bucks to keep CWD from spreading. Excuse me. bucks grooming each other during the summer, etc. What are your thoughts on different states' regulations? Wow, where do I start here, Jerry? First of all,
we could
Jerry knows where this is going.
Oh yeah.
You're exactly right that, you know, you need for a state to have a quality deer herd, you know, with older age class bucks with larger antlers, you've got to limit the buck harvest. You got to move more of them young bucks into the older age classes, and you do that by not shooting them. So you take a state like Ohio with a one buck limit, and the fact that they have and then your other point was the gun season, and Ohio has a gun season that I believe it starts the Monday after Thanksgiving, or maybe it's the Saturday after Thanksgiving. Anyway, it's very late. It's after the rut's primarily over. You know, that is ideal management, in my opinion. And then it goes all the way to, you know, these states that have lengthy gun season. You know, a good example is right next to Ohio is Indiana. And Indiana has like almost 3 weeks of gun hunting right in the middle of the rut. And yeah, they've got a one buck limit, but the thing of it is just about everybody that buys a tag kills a buck because they can do it with a gun during the entire rut, essentially. Those are the key ingredients. But I really want to touch on your comment about CWD from spreading. I think this is just my opinion and my guess. I think a lot of state game agencies, they don't want to see older age class bucks because CWD is more prevalent in older bucks. And so they want to get them bucks killed before they get older and contract CWD or however they get it. So I think there is a movement among many state game agencies to not be managing for older age class animals. My opinion, again, it's just my opinion, I think CWD is a political disease, very similar to COVID for humans. I think it's a very polarizing disease. And I'll tell you what, I think really stinks about the whole thing is if you watch the whole COVID situation that we're dealing with humans now, you know, it's been very polarizing. There's people on opposite sides of the issue that just, you know, one side buys whatever the mainstream media and the government tells them. You know, you got to get your vaccine. You got to get your booster shot. You got to wear a mask everywhere you go. You got to do this. You got to do that. And they do it. They fall right in line. They do it. And then you got the other side that they're not so sure about the government. You know, they don't, you know, they've had COVID and they don't think they need the vaccine. And, you know, if people that are vaccinated or if the vaccine really works, why are they worried about people that don't get it? Well, you know, it's the very same situation is kind of, you know, it's happened with CWD. But the thing that really bothers me is that so many deer hunters just willingly bought into whatever the state game agency said without even thinking about it themselves. The same way people buy into COVID hysteria without even, you know, thinking about it and using their head and adding a little common sense to the equation. So these state game agencies tell us that this prion that causes CWD lives in the soil for thousands of years. And once it's in the soil, you know, it's there. And they think now that even plants can take up that prion in the plant. And then a deer eats that plant and they get CWD that way. And then they turn around and here in Illinois, for example, if a positive deer is found with CWD, what's the state do? They come in with sharpshooters and bait piles. And they try to eliminate every single deer for a 2 mile radius around that site where that positive CWD case was found. And they do this for 5 years. They just try to wipe all these deer out in the 2 mile radius for 5 years. And then what? They walk away. Well, they've just told us this prion lives for thousands of years. So what have they done for 5 years? They've just went out there and they've annihilated a resource. They've wasted taxpayer dollars, And here's a story that a firsthand story. This is not something that I'm sharing, you know, secondhand because I was involved in this situation. A few years ago, my state senator introduced a bill in Illinois at my request to allow supplemental feeding of deer in the state outside of hunting season only. I'm not talking about baiting during season. I'm just talking about supplemental feeding deer once deer season is over. And he met with our DNR, and he came out of that meeting with DNR just so frustrated. And he told me to me, this is not being relayed to me from someone else. My state senator told me after his meeting with DNR, he had never seen anything like this in his life. He said these people were more concerned about the keeping these sharpshooters employed than they were the resource. They didn't care about the deer at all. They wanted to make sure that these government-paid sharpshooters still had a job, and that was their main concern. Unbelievable. CWD is a political disease, no different than the coronavirus or COVID. End of story.
Oh,
fact.
Boy.
Fact. Now, I guarantee you that somebody's going to send this. Illinois DNR is going to hear this. They're going to get pissed off. And they're going to try to retaliate against me somehow. I guarantee it.
Well, but now
no, I'll just throw it out now, there right now. Guarantee it.
But now that we have the podcast, we have our official complaint department that they can work through. Remember, we set that up a couple weeks
well,
ago.
Well, yeah. It's a fact, though. Everything I said is 100% true.
Yeah, not secondhand. So, all right. Well, we're at an hour, 6 minutes. Do you want to try to squeeze in a third question, or are we going to sandbag that one for next week? What are you thinking?
It's up to you.
Let's go for it. Everybody likes listening to these. I think that's one of the best parts about this podcast. We'll run a little bit long, but let's go ahead and work our third question in for tonight.
The last question comes from Jerry Kienast. I guess I hope I said your name right, Jerry. Jerry is from Sussex, Wisconsin. And he says, "Hi, Don and Terry. I recently started listening to your podcast, and I am hooked. I love your insights on deer management and really like you sharing God's word with it. We have 150 acres in middle Wisconsin and have begun to better manage it. We currently shoot bucks 3.5 years or better. We would like to see some better bucks antler development. We are concerned about having enough protein available year-round. We have 4 plots we hunt over and plant them in mid to late July, so they are prime for the start of the September bow hunt with a mix of brassica, clover, and legumes. We have about 30 acres of corn and leave 4 acres of it up to overwinter for the deer. We also have a 13-acre field of Ladino clover we leave up year-round. Are we missing anything food-wise that would help antler growth? We have taken few does and more bucks than does over the last 5 years, so our buck to doe ratio is heavy on the does. What things could we do to attract bigger bucks and hold them? Thanks for the great work you both are doing, Jerry." Jerry, I think there's one big hole in your food plot program, and that is soybeans. You mentioned that you have 30 acres of corn. You leave 4 of it up. I would be planting some soybeans, and how much to start with, I have no idea. It's going to be based on, you know, the deer population in your area. I would probably start with 5 acres of soybeans. Soybeans are going to provide that protein source in the winter when it's hard to find anywhere else. Now, in the summertime, you're going to have your Ladino clover, and I don't know what other legumes you have, alfalfa potentially. But I think you need some soybeans in that mix. And then you would have a pretty complete and diverse food plot program. The other thing that jumps out at me with your question, Jerry, it says, what things could we do to attract bigger bucks and hold them? Well, right out of the gate, you need to forget about attracting bigger bucks to your property. You need to grow them. The bucks that are there now, you need to let them get to the older age classes, and you got to grow them. That's one of the things I push to my consulting clients, too, is forget about creating the magic property and then just sucking in bucks from all over. You got to grow them. You can do whatever you want to your property, and how's a buck 3 miles away going to know that you did it? You're going to have to grow those older bucks. And that's something, just a lesson that I learned managing this farm over the last 3 or 4 decades. I just finally figured out that I'm not going to just magically pull in big bucks. I'm going to have to grow them, and that's what you're going to have to do too.
Great point. That's the first time, and maybe this is an idea for an upcoming video that we do on the Chasing Giants YouTube channel, the difference between attracting and growing big bucks. I think that putting it that way means a little bit more to when you really think about it, you know, because we're all trying to do things to pull. I mean, how many questions did both of us get this last week on how to pull a buck off a neighbor's property?
Yeah,
we had at least 3 or 4 that we were both on the same message for. I don't know how many times you got asked that. So, you know, we're always thinking about how can we attract versus how can we grow. That's a great point that I think we probably need to remember and put in our back pocket for some future material.
Yeah, for sure. Good idea, Terry.
All right. Well, with that, we want to thank everybody for tuning in. As I said, the popularity and the amount of people listening to this podcast is just overwhelming. We hope that it's because we try to be honest and try to use this platform for not only your entertainment, but you to learn a little bit, and then to also gain awareness for the Lester's Feet Foundation, which is the foundation that Don and I kind of put together by accident. I wish one of us or both of us were smart enough to really see how this thing would have navigated into a resource for families with sick children to fall back on. So I don't have anything else but just a sincere thank you to all those people that continue to share the podcast with their friends and get them listening to it. We hope that as we build on hunting season this year, you guys are telling all your hunting buddies to tune in to it every week, and we'll try to keep bringing you new content, including shooting cell cameras with a tactical shotgun.
So before we sign off, we promised to give that address again for those who want to attend the master course. If you want to attend, the dates again are March 10th and 12th with Bronson Strickland. Those two classes are $2,000 per student. And then March 17th, 19th, 24th, and 26th is the regular master course. As Terry said, we meet the evening before on all those. Those regular master courses are $1,500. If you're interested in attending, send a check to Higgins Outdoors. The address is 1459 North 3500 East Road, and that's in Gays, Illinois, 61928. And when you submit your check, make sure that you put the date of the course you want to attend and the name of everybody you know, on your list that'll be attending with you. So, look forward to that next spring. Have 6 of those courses, 2 with Dr. Strickland, and then this 4 of the regular ones. So, anything to add there, Terry?
Nope. Why don't you take us out with our sponsors? Thanks for listening, everybody.
All right. We want to thank our sponsors, BioFarm.com, Victory Chevrolet, Lone Wolf Tree Stands, WildlifeFarming.com, Quiet Cat, Vortex Optics, Vengeance Camo, 360 Hunting Blind, Real World Wildlife Products, Matthews Archery. Appreciate the support, everyone. Have a great week.